Don't miss a second of the action. Subscribe now to the OTB AM podcast to get it every weekday morning in your podcast feed from 10 a.m.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow.
Right, Alan Quinlan, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm very good, Ger. Can we talk football this morning instead of rugby, please?
I was going to say, the grimness of Saturday replaced by Sunday. What was it like? How excited did you get?
Oh, I was. It was unbelievable because, you know, for me, my mum is from Artfinnan, which is steeped in football history. Her brother-in-law, her sister's husband, basically, was Petey Savage is his name. He's been like a stalwart for in Tipperary football for about 50 years between managing, playing, being a selector, fundraising, you name it. I actually rang him yesterday and my aunt drove around Artfinnan in the car beeping the horn and made a show of herself, but everybody started coming out of the houses then. And I think my uncle, Petey Savage, actually shed a couple of tears yesterday. So it was very special. And you know, I have cousins who played on the ladies' football team from Artfinnan. My aunt is involved with the ladies' football team for years. So it's there's plenty of Gaelic football on my mum's side of the family as well, and I played it a lot. So, look, I know a lot of the players, and you know, Ger, aside from being from Tipperary, I always love to see emotion in sport, whether it be my own son playing a match and seeing the emotion in his face when they win. Right across the board, it's just incredible to see that kind of joy and emotion in Cavan and in the Tipperary players yesterday. Of course, it's hard on Cork people and it's hard on Donegal. Cork shocked Kerry a few weeks ago and then they experienced that shock yesterday. But to see teams playing with fear and abandonment, we see modern day sport is so structured at times. You know, sports people become very robotic. And I thought yesterday the football was... It was free flowing. You can always question quality, and you can say, "Look, the quality wasn't as high as it could have been. It was sloppy at times, missed points." But I just thought there was a freedom there in both matches, and a joy just to see people so excited about sport. So it was lovely. It's lovely because hurling in Tipperary is number one, and the footballers. You know, they play second fiddle, and I played a lot of Gaelic football growing up as well, and I played on my senior football team when I was 17 in Arval Rovers in Tipperary Town. So I loved Gaelic football as well as hurling, of course. But just to see some of the guys there who've been there a long time trudging away for Tipperary and to get a reward for that yesterday. And look, David Power, the Tipperary manager, is such a lovely, humble guy. And, you know, do you see people... I said, you look at Mario Ledesma last week when Argentina beat New Zealand, and to see that kind of emotion in people when there's tears in their eyes, is that's what sport is all about.
Did you think that it might not happen for this team, Alan? Like, I'm sure you'll have followed them closely up through the underage ranks. And I was kind of making the point earlier that the 2016 semi-final might have felt like their apex, which is kind of a patronising way of talking about this Tip team. Nobody really gave them a chance of coming back and actually winning meaningful silverware. Did you feel the same way?
Yeah, well, you felt a little bit that the kind of chance was gone a little bit, that, you know, maybe after that kind of high trajectory, playing very well against Mayo, a few things going wrong in that semi-final from they ran Mayo close. And, you know, possibly felt then that, yeah, look, it's... Will we get back to this level again? And but, you know, like David Power said yesterday, I had him on News Talk this morning, he believed that a lot of these guys are really, really talented footballers. They won that minor title in 2011, the final of the under-21s in 2015. So sometimes when you don't have the baggage of losing so much at senior level, and they've run Cork quite close a number of times. Look... Would Tip have beaten Kerry yesterday? It's highly unlikely. Cork caught Kerry, and Tip would have had a lot more confidence playing against Cork, you know, than Kerry. So they believed in themselves, and you know, and I as I said, a lot of my family and my mum's side are heavily involved in Tipperary football. So I actually made a few phone calls to them yesterday, and it's just lovely to you know, they're the ones that have always rang me over the years, and we won European Cups or titles with Munster and won big matches. And I just thought it was appropriate yesterday to ring them and see what it means to them. Because, look, it's behind the scenes. These are amateur people, and you know what it's like. Trudging away, sometimes not getting the reward, and they got that reward yesterday. But it wasn't built on just emotion or a one-off day. I think this has been building for a while, and they were talented. They took some brilliant scores. We've had Michael Quinlivan on. What, you know, a couple of great points. The Colin O'Riordan story coming back from Sydney. You know, some class footballers there. But look, it's yesterday was their day. You know, the story will be now, will they beat Mayo? Will Dublin are going to win the All-Ireland anyway and all that kind of stuff? But I said this to David Power this morning. You must enjoy the moments in sport. For any kids or underage teams or amateur people in any sport, forget about what's going to happen in 2 weeks. They must enjoy these next couple of days and be really proud of what they've done. And, you know, that's the reward you get for all the nights they go training. You know, leaving work early, getting up early in the morning, doing training, doing extra stuff. For GA people right across the country, and it's a special moment for them and the Cavan players. We saw that emotion there as well. So I love that in sport. It's just brilliant. Having been involved in sport all my life, the tears come to my eyes with emotion, not when I was playing or not when I won when I was playing, but I was really emotional yesterday watching that. But not just for Tip, but for Cavan to see grown men about to cry doing interviews. That's just lovely.
Yeah. There would have been another reason for grown men to be crying after England beat Ireland on Saturday. We just don't have it when it comes to these games against England. Like, in a way, that defeat was almost as grim as any of the other ones because we knew what was coming. We picked a team that was apparently picked to try and stop what England were going to do to us. And England didn't even have to be that good, and still, it was completely in their control, it felt like.
Yeah, I don't think it was as grim as the other ones. That's my opinion. I know some people, and if you look at some of the player ratings and some of the papers and online, people are having a right pop off them. And, you know, the narrative sometimes is that the Irish media are not hard enough on the Irish rugby team. I think they've been pretty hard after the weekend. You know, I saw headlines and words, no flair, no imagination. Coaching team need to look at themselves. And, you know, some of those things are true, but I wouldn't go to the extreme. I think we're missing a lot of players. We're missing a lot of good players. We have a lot of changes in the side from 12, 14, 18 months ago. And it is a very, very difficult place to go at the best of times, even when England are not on the high that they're on and don't have the quality they have now. So it's a very difficult place to go. 11 of that team, you know, played in the World Cup final last year. And, you know, we all know England probably got caught on the day. Credit to South Africa and all that. But England are at a very, very high level. And they play a negative style as well. You know, Eddie Jones has come out a few times trying to taunt Ireland about the kicking game and that Ireland are very predictable. But, you know, England are very, very predictable. Of course, they have some individual flair like Johnny May. You know, the try where he goes length of the field is sensational. It's phenomenal. He's one of the best wingers, if not the best winger in the world. The crossfield kick, you know, to catch that cleanly, you know, a little bit naive from Hugo Keenan, just got caught on the inside a little bit. So, you know, it was a tough day for Jamison Gibson-Park. He likes to snipe and take a little step every time, but he got caught so many times the other day by the English back row and the English forwards. You just can't do that against them. And the set piece for me is, of course, we have issues. And I think some of them are fixable. Obviously, the concern and the psychological damage that England have done to us in the last few years will still linger on. But look, it's very early days in the cycle of the next World Cup. So there is no doubt we need change. We need fresh blood. We need new players. We need to give Andy Farrell a little bit of time, to be fair. Any team going to Twickenham last Saturday would have struggled against that English side. They're on top of their game, world-class players. That back row, it's most probably going to be the Lions' back row. Etoje was sensational. Launchbury, a phenomenal player. You know, their front row is... The vast majority of that pack will probably be the Lions' starting pack next summer in South Africa. So I'm not making excuses for them. I was frustrated watching it at times. I think the decision-making and actually having a bit of heads-up rugby and seeing space and opportunities and some of the one-out runners, again, were, you know, frustrating to watch because we just don't seem to see. England are very, very aggressive at the side of the ruck when we have the ball and we try and pick and jam. And you can do that against Wales, Italy, Scotland. You just don't get, you can't. It should have been changed a little bit. I think we should have get a little bit of width, even if it's a one-out runner, that it's a wider pass, that we're trying to get out a little bit wider from that very aggressive strength and power that England possess around the side of the rucks. Our breakdown was a worry and a concern as well because, you know, our breakdown was very good against Wales, but you're playing against a different team in England and they caused us untold issues. And the other thing for me is psychologically, we're kicking into the corner against an incredibly powerful team who have an ability to unsettle anybody. And we're trying to say we're going to try and maul you over the line and we're not taking points. So if we kick some of the penalties the other day, well, then in the last 20 minutes of the game, we might put a little bit of panic in them. And, you know, so I think there, of course, there's issues, but I just don't think it's as bad as the other ones because for some of the reason to mitigate, there is some mitigating factors. I think we'll get better. And if we get our best team out in the field, obviously the out half and scrum half and out half position now, there's an uncertainty there. Who are going to be the next 9 and 10? And in fairness to Conor Murray, and look, it's easier when you come on the field and when you're getting beaten. But I thought his passing was superb and really crisp. That's not to say that Jamison Gibson-Park is finished now. He's not. He's a brilliant player. But look at the contrast last week when you get the ball on a plate against Wales. He looks so good. He's now got to learn, how do I play international rugby when you just don't have that time and space? So in all honesty, I thought when you play against England, a lot of the time it's a Peter Stringer type scrum half you want, who's just going to whip the ball away time after time after time, get the ball into that first receiver, whether it be a forward or the fly half, and give them that extra second on the ball so they can pass it on to someone. But, you know, from an attacking point of view, we were very blunt again. Yeah. I thought Bundiaki, someone who I'm a fan of, he just looks quite predictable. And these are the kind of games where he just seems quite robotic in his approach. You watch him playing for Connacht when they're playing superior teams, Connacht in Europe, and Bundiaki just pops up everywhere and he's offloading and he's just an energy. He needs to free himself a little bit because he's a very talented player. You know, Chris Farrell gets some criticism for Johnny May, but look, Johnny May can do that to anybody. I don't think that's Chris Farrell's fault. He got stood up a little bit. I think the problem there is we lost the line out. Ross Byrne had a chance to really secure the loose ball. And you can go back over the performance and say there's lots of things wrong. You know, I watched Eddie O'Sullivan on RTE afterwards, and you know, Eddie thought he was pretty skiding in his in his assessment. And, you know, I agree with some of it, but I just think it's very hard to implement any sort of a game plan against a team that are so physical and put you under so much pressure. But we had a couple of little opportunities, and if they look back at the video, you know, Keith Earls makes the break down the touchline. I think CJ Stander and Caelan Doris, after the ball being kind of sealed off, both of those guys could have come in and been a scrum half straight away. Hugo Keenan comes in really quite tight to the ruck. He nearly runs into Andrew Porter. And then we get turned over. Two wide passes there, and there's in all probability we score a try. And that's the heads-up rugby and the rugby intelligence that, okay, we can all see in the TV, or if you're at the game, you can see in the stand. But just there's still a lack of rugby intelligence when we get into those areas about finding that space, just putting the ball through the hands and identifying where the space is. And, you know, if they score a try there, it's never a game that you're going to score. There's going to be a lot of opportunities. But we had a couple of glimpses and chances there that we just didn't take. And look, when you have over 60% possession and over 60% territory, well, if you presented that to someone after a game and said, who won this game? You'd be saying that Ireland should have won it. But then you look at the four or five lost lineouts, and even a couple that they won were sloppy again, didn't get anywhere in them all. So
the lineout's a bit of a disaster.
it's not working. And look, they've got to take onus for that. The coaches have to take onus, the players. And I just don't feel any confidence at that top level. Like I said, when you're playing other teams that are probably at our level now, there's a couple, New Zealand, England, South Africa, Australia have made a lot of strides. Argentina have shown that, with a lot of new guys there, they can be a real force as well. But I thought we were the architect of our own downfall. Look, with respect to Mario Tosje, he's 6'5". He's not 6'10". I don't think, this sounds crazy, he's not the best defensive line-out operator in the world. You look at someone like O'Connell or Matfield, and if I was playing or analysing a line-out with those guys, and I think they're so brilliant and so agile and so good in the air. He is very good in the air, don't get me wrong. But we make him look good when we throw in his area, and it's slow, and it's the movement on the ground is slow, the call is in the wrong area, the execution of the lift, all that stuff is wrong. And I just don't see any sort of confidence. And you need to win good ball off the tail of the line, middle and tail of the line out, to really launch an attack and make it difficult for the opposition. And even when we win it there's a hand in there, it's slow, it's sloppy. England are shooting up and they take away all that space. So it's not kind of front foot quality ball. And the line out is a serious problem and worry, because they seem to kind of be looking around each other. And as I said, it's just, there's not a confidence there. Is it fixable? Of course it is. And, you get experience. But you think back to the game in Twickenham and when it was 57-15, the World Cup warm-up. And again, you're just walking into a lineup and you think, I don't know if we're even going to win this.
No, it felt like England kicked the ball out and it's 50-50 whether or not they're going to get the ball back, which is like a brilliant attacking platform for you to be able to just boot the ball as far as you want it, whenever you want it. And one last point, and we're almost completely out of time, so we can come back to this again if you'd prefer. But our attack, where's the hallmark, where's the fingerprints of Mike Catt on this team at the moment?
It's not there at the moment. I think we certainly tried to move the ball against Italy and Wales and a few little signs, and France, even over in Paris. I was seeing a couple of signs there of that. Like, they would have known about England. The concern here is they would have known that England are, going to get off that line really, really quickly. I think the little dink kick shows that, and this is a case when you play England a lot, there is a little bit of space in the backfield. And we do that little dink kick from Billy Burns for Stockdale's try. And if you watch the game again, there's a lot of space in the backfield. So they just send 13 guys and they try and keep as many players on their feet. And that's credit to John Mitchell for the way he has them operating. It's so difficult to attack when you're behind the gain line. So you've got to win the gain line first. And it goes back to your set piece, Ger. It goes back to winning that quality line-out ball where you can get a bit of width in the ball and you can really force your attack. The opposition don't get settled and then you look good going forward. So, like I said, Wales, Italy, and even some moments against France, we looked good, but there's a lack of cohesion there. Who are our best centres? We have so much uncertainty around, with Johnny Sexton out of the team. Then our centres have been chopped and changed. Our back three have been chopped and changed a bit. So the attack just really needs to, we need to see more. We'll play Georgia next week. Of course, it's going to be easier.
Do you invest more time? We talked briefly, but Ross Byrne, give him like 10 caps starting to see how that goes.
Probably. And an option might be to get more of a playmaker as a 12, because we just look too blunt and we've looked for power and aggression in our centres in the last couple of years. And to a point, it's very, very, it's worked. But maybe we need some more of a footballing 12 that obviously is a good kicking option. And listen, England kicked the letter off the ball the other day again. So kicking is a very important part of the game.
Yeah.
But good kicking. But I think it might be an option to look at a playmaker. But look, it's early days from yet as well, Ger. It's going to take a little bit of time. They had a couple of Six Nations games, massive long break. This thing has been crammed together in the last number of weeks since they've come back. So it'll take a little bit of time, but certainly it's an area that needs to improve dramatically.
All right, Alan, good stuff. Thanks very much for that.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.